Audit meeting to order, October 9th, 2018. Time is 10 o'clock. We'll subtract 5 minutes from that speedy clock to get it more accurate. We'd like to go ahead and have a roll call, please.
Representative Kawasaki? Representative Seaton?
Here.
Representative Sponholz?
Here.
Representative Johnston?
Here.
Representative Ortiz, alternate?
Here.
Representative Josephson, vice chair?
Here.
Senator McKinnon?
Here.
Senator Bishop?
Here.
Senator Giesel?
Here.
Senator Hoffman? Senator Von Imhoff, alternate?
Here. Here.
Senator Stedman, chair?
Here.
10 members present.
We do have a quorum to conduct business today. I'd like to thank everybody for coming in on the fall day to get this done. We'll hopefully we'll be done in a couple hours. This should go fairly smooth. We have the first item on the agenda today is approval of the agenda. Rep. Josephson, please, for a motion.
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the agenda.
We have a motion to approve the agenda. Do we have any discussion? Objection, I should say first. Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and approve the agenda as presented. Next item, approval of the July 12, 2018 minutes. Yep, Josephson, may I have a motion, please?
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the minutes of the July 12, 2018 meeting as presented.
Do we have objection? We have, I think, a modification here. I'm going to prep those things you've got. We'll do the next one. Yeah, okay. We'll go ahead and approve the July 12th, 18th meeting as presented. Next is the approval of the RPL 109-5001 DNR Exxon Valdez oil spill outreach. Josephson, can I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the RPL 10-9-5001 DNR Exxon Valdez oil spill outreach as presented.
Now object and see if there's a TO online.
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Online. We just have a brief at ease.
Is this not live?
And speak to the issue at hand.
I am David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance Division, and RPL 10-9-5001 is a request by the Department of Natural Resources for authorization to spend $140,712 provided by the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trust so that staff and the Parks Management and Access Allocation can develop an outreach program for the 30th anniversary of the Exxon Valdez oil spill. It's one-time funding. There's no impact on future budgets, and existing positions will perform the work. Ledge Finance doesn't have any issues with the RPL, but we did note that this is a new fund source for the Parks Management allocation, and that sending money through Fish and Game, which is the typical recipient of Exxon Valdez money, was possible but not necessary. And DNR responded to our comments by saying that setting up an RSA would add administrative work to both agencies with no improvement in results, and we agree with that. We also noted that committee members may wish to ask the agency about money freed by using the trust money to replace DNR's normal funding sources, and the agency responded that to that issue to our satisfaction. But I think the admin service director for the Department of Natural Resources is online if you have any further questions for her.
Any permission or questions from committee members? Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, I just would like to hear what they're going to do with the displaced money that was noted by Mr. Keough.
Mr. Keough, could you help the finance chairman of that question, please? Excuse me, the department. DNR.
Good morning. For the record, Bobby and Peter Contest, Director of Support Services for the Department of Natural Resources. Senator McKinnon, through the chair, to your question about how we will use displaced funds, we have four positions that are working in that unit who will be partially funded by the Exxon Valdez oil spill funding. Two of the positions are currently 100% soft funded, so they have CIP receipts, interagency receipts, and statutory designated program receipt funding. That's all soft funding. So we are generally looking for money for those positions throughout the year that may not be realizable revenue. The other two positions are, one is 75% soft funded, and the other 25% is general fund program receipts in the parks components. And the fourth position is 60% soft funded, 40% general fund program receipts. So there is not necessarily actual money for those positions that will be displaced. As I mentioned, we're always looking for soft funding to fund those positions throughout the year.
Follow-up question? I think this item might want to be, discussed and looked at through the regular budget process also this winter. Any other questions, concerns dealing with this RPL 10-9-5001 from the committee? Seeing none, Jefferson.
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve RPL 10-9-5001, DNR, Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Outreach as presented.
Please.
You can object. You don't even have to say please, object to the chairman. Senator Von Imhoff, speak to your objection.
I would like to have the opportunity to look into the possibility, I believe, from a different position that I have, that the Exxon Valdez Settlement Fund is being proposed to be absorbed by the Alaska Community Foundation. And I need to check and see how far along that process is and whether I have my facts straight. But that's my understanding of what's happening, and that could change how this fund is being managed and ultimately how grants are processed. So I just want to make sure, and I just need one day just to make sure that this is, in fact, correct before we approve this.
Well, don't put it out there like that, but we have no intention of holding another meeting here tomorrow. I'd like the representative from DNR to speak to the concern, please, if she could.
For the record, Bobby and Peter Contest, Director of Support Services. Senator Von Imhoff, I am not aware of the Exxon Valdez trust fund being absorbed by any foundation. It's the first I've heard of it. We could certainly look into it, but I'm not aware of that. This funding has been approved by the trustee council and also approved via Court Order 69, which Departmental Law has weighed in on, which is in line with how the Exxon Valdez oil spill funds should be spent. So otherwise, I'm not aware of any other change in how the fund is managed.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, during the capital budget process cycle, during the last legislative session, I believe the legislature removed a request for use of these funds because there was an issue of whether people were competing fairly for the funds, is what I'm recalling on a singular appropriation. So I just put that out there that those that are in control of these funds have suggested uses of funds that we've denied before.
So do we have a continuation of your objection?
No.
Okay, thank you. But we will ask Senator Von Imhoff to take a look at her concerns, get back to the chairman. Committee will take a look at that. And if we have to deal with it, we will. If not, we'll have those conversations in the legislative arena this winter, fleshed out. Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, I won't be returning to Juneau in January of this year, and I would just ask committee members that go forward with this, that EVOS, the money that is sitting there is funding federal jobs in some instances that are creating blockades for development in some areas of our state. And so a look or a second look at how that is operating and what those funds are being utilized for the benefit of Alaska. And certainly it's been great benefit to restore some damaged property and coastal areas that were impacted by the Valdez oil spill, Exxon Valdez oil spill. But again, we're starting to get some fairly creative thinking for use of those funds, and we may, as a group, want to look at that a little bit differently to see if those funds should be deployed differently than paying for federal, and paying for the federal may be just what we want to do in cooperation and collaboration with some issues, but I've just seen a greater dependency on using the funds from the state of Alaska and EVOS to fund federal employees.
I think that's a good point, Senator McKinnon, and we have two chairmen of the resource committees here, and they can pass that information on to the future chairmans, and I think that's something that should be discussed and kept an eye on in the legislature. Any other objection to moving this forward? Seeing no further objection, we will advance to the next item on the agenda. Approval of a special audit request, Medicaid, eligibility and pre-certification. And we have Mr. Roraro.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randy Roraro, R-U-A-R-O. Members have before them a special audit request dated October 3rd, 2018. The request was developed with the assistance of the auditor. The subject matter of the request relates to the determination of eligibility and re-eligibility or recertification of individuals for Medicaid and CHIP program benefits. Background is set out in the request. It's a extremely large program, large numbers of beneficiaries, enrollees. Alaska also has a very high migratory population, so we have a lot of tens of thousands of residents moving in and tens of thousands of people coming in every year, which is important to track and make sure the program's being provided to those, you know, who are truly eligible. And so the purpose of the audit is really to dive into how the department's doing in determining eligibility and recertification for the programs. Are they timely acting? Are they documenting properly their actions? And the audit also extends in bullet five to best practices, which in talking to the number of persons with expertise in Medicaid eligibility, it was mentioned that there is a significant disparity between states that do a very good job at determining Medicaid eligibility and states that have larger error rates and maybe aren't using the best practices. So I think a key, you know, portion of the audit will be not only the numbers of how the agency is doing, but also looking at what are states that have low error rates doing well, what tools are they using And is the state of Alaska, DHSS, using those same tools, or can they improve? So I think for the audit's important for the legislature's oversight role, but also it should, in the end, result in some good information for the agency to use to comply with its federal audits, which if there's errors, FAM knows that can be penalties levied against the program. So I think it'll be a good, it'll provide a good base of information for further review and action by both the agency and the legislature.
Okay. Any questions? Let's see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How does this relate to the additional positions that we added this last year? I think we have 20 additional positions because there was such a long backlog and delay. So is this audit going to be looking at prior to and then segregating that to after the implementation of the current budget and the additional people that were put on to get rid of some of that untimeliness and backlog?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I think that'd be a very good way to proceed with the audit. The language of the request is broad enough for the auditor to adapt, you know, her practices, and that would be a good thing to major to see how those additional positions and funding are helping the error rate go down.
Mrs. Curtis, could you come forward, please? After you introduce yourself for the record, and you present, maybe you can help respond to that question also from the auditor's perspective.
For the record, this is Chris Curtis, legislative auditor. It would be our intent to look probably at FY19. In the spring of, my intent is to start in the spring of next year. Now we'll be looking at FY19. We'd like to coordinate it with our federal compliance requirements and testing that program to get the most maximum benefit from the audit. We would be solely looking at FY18, maybe going back to FY19 and going back maybe 18. The intent wouldn't be to look at whether the additional positions impacted the error rate. I'm not sure we could ever really identify that as a cause and an effect. We would be looking at mainly doing a sampling, possibly contracting out that sampling work to an expert, also asking that expert to look at best practices across well-performing states and applying that to the state of Alaska, coming up with error rates, quantifying the funds that have been spent inappropriately or inaccurately on ineligible recipients to quantify the impact, fiscal impact to the state. I wouldn't, unless I got specific direction, focus on the impact of specific PCNs to the error rate. I don't know if we could actually quantify that as a cause and effect.
I'm concerned because it's not. One of the things, non-compliance is timeliness of getting those through. And so if we were just looking, well, we know we had a large backlog and we were out of compliance probably for timeliness of applicants and getting people through, that's going to tell us something we already know, that we're basically out of compliance with the timeliness issue. So I think it'd be really important to find out whether after we get the people on board, I mean, didn't start till July 1st, the new budget for 19. So there's going to be a backlog of time, I presume, while you get 20 people hired, get them on board, get them up to sufficiency for doing that. So I think it's a complication that we need to at least to have, if nothing else, some kind of an analysis of a footnote of, okay, between the first half of the year when we had 20 less people and the second half of 19 when we have a more fully staffed, did the timeliness go down to our compliance with regulations improve or not. So I think that that's something that we're going to need to know, because we put the positions in, but if we don't know that they're effective at increasing our timeliness compliance, then that would be something that I think we would be lacking in the issue.
Through the chair, I believe we would get a sense of whether it's improving throughout the audit. But if we are auditing the whole of FY19, and we have to hire them and train them, and they're probably working on backlog, I don't believe that by the spring we will know for sure. We will have an indication of whether it's improving and they're being able to address the backlog. But to see that, I don't think it's enough time to see the impact on the error rates. We will be in there, we'll be doing inquiry, we will know whether it's making a difference, but quantifying the difference, I don't believe we're going to have enough time. But I will certainly include in the audit report whether the department is moving in the right direction or whether the impact of the new positions. I'll be sure to address that in the report, but the sample and the testing, I don't believe is going to give you enough time to see that quantitatively. Thank you. You have best practices in this audit, and Code for America has chosen the state of Alaska as one of its five pilot states for benefits. And they are currently working here with the department on this. And so would you be assessing the value that they are bringing to benefits department, and also assessing if it's part of the best practices and assessing the department's coordination and participation in Code for America to see if we're getting the best of what we can out of the whole process? Through the chair, I'm not familiar with what that is. Code for America?
Code for America is actually you can go online and look it up. But we have been picked as one of their five states. And basically what they've done in California with counties where these programs are administered, SNAP is administered by the counties, not by the state, they have changed application process from this to your iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, they've also increased the accountability and the efficiency and the effectiveness of the whole program.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very much involved in bringing it into the state. Mm-hmm. And I would like, as you're looking at this, because this is a process that's going on right now, and I think it's going to have much broader impact than 20 positions that look a lot. So I just wanted to raise that as part of your best practices as you're looking at it and make sure that, you know, my concern is we have this opportunity, and I just want to make sure that the division is working well in being part of this opportunity.
Thank you, Chair. I know it's part of your sort of, it's part of the mandate sort of, Chris Curtis, that there's recommendations that come out of an audit. But I just wanted to sort of state the obvious, which is that, you know, we know that there are some challenges here, and we really need to know, you know, what from your perspective based on the analysis should be done, because there's a, you know, we're trying several strategies. We just discussed a couple of them. You know, we need to understand what the drivers are in terms of, you know, challenges and opportunities, you know, moving forward. And so I'm sort of stating the obvious, but I want to put it out there that what I'm really looking for from this is if we're not meeting these objectives, why and what should we do about it?
Senator McCain. And then Senator Von Imhoff, and I think she'll add to that previous question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I wanted to applaud the effort to go forward for an audit. So I support the request that's before us.
but I have a couple concerns. I said as the chairman before on this committee, and Department of Health and Social Services has not always been cooperative in allowing our auditors access to information. Some of that was because we were changing from one system to another, and it was difficult for them to react. So I'm wondering, Ms. Curtis, if you feel like you're going to get the cooperation that you need from the department to appropriately look at the issues that we're trying to quantify.
Mr. McKinnon, through the chair, I expect 100% compliance by the department. We are now their auditors responsible for evaluating their federal programs. So we are currently in there auditing Medicaid and CHIP and all the other major federal programs for FY18. And we've had no issues this year with accessibility, so I expect full cooperation.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, was that the department that held us up on being timely last year? Am I recalling that correctly, that you did not get responses in a timely manner for us to report on time to the federal government?
Through the chair, our issues a lot last year had to do with outside auditors and the timeliness of their audits into the state of Alaska in order for us to be able to issue our financial audit opinion.
Thank you. Are we certified? Is the system certified, do you know? Or is there someone online from the department that can tell us whether we're certified after 4 years?
Through the chair, I have been told the state is certified. I wish the Department of Health and Social Services were on the line to respond to that directly. I have been told that that there's indications that this, I'm not sure we've got the actual documentation yet, but my understanding is yes, that we are. So that is what I've been told. I think that would be an excellent question for the department.
Mr. Chairman, if we can either add it for you to ask the department directly. We've been told they were in compliance before and that they were just waiting for the paperwork, and then we received a list of, you know, 5, 10, 15 errors that they still were not able to certify the system. And the reason I ask that has to do with money. So there is a 5 or 10% rebate that the state is looking for as we did the Medicare expansion. With those numbers of having 100% coverage from those who might access from our tribal communities. And so that is a dollar amount that this committee should be watching for. It's in the millions. I'm not sure that it's in the tens of millions, because it was, you know, it was a small rebate for the effort that the governor and this administration put forward in expanding those services out. But there's a rebate that you should be looking for in the millions of dollars if they are in fact compliance. And it was a request that they had to make for standing up the system.
Let me follow up on that. We can send the department a letter so we get a formal response back to that answer and get it to the committee members, because I think both the both finance committees are going to want to know that for sure when we start up this next session anyway, and also the audit committee. So we'll have a letter sent out so we have that response before you retire.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, part of the problem is that the legislature from the department's position short-funded them $50 million. Mm-hmm. And my concern is that at least some members of that I work with in the Senate expected the department to live within their means and actually reduce their spending by that appropriate amount. And so I'm afraid, and I know that you've asked this question before because I've seen something from our legislative finance team on the shortfalls that you will face when you return to Juneau based on the operations of this administration. And please send the letter so that we can know. We have been waiting, I think it's 3 years and not four. I know that there's been challenges, but the IT is getting the better of all of us, whether it's at the state level or even at our local level. We've watched that play out in the Anchorage Daily News with the cost of moving from PeopleSoft to another system. And we have to get this technology and the overruns that it's creating under control, or it's just a hidden cost to everything we do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. we should get that response, and it'll be a nice retirement response for Senator McKinnon to actually have this accomplished for you right off into the sunset, rather than calling you when you're in retirement or off your chair telling you what finally got done. Senator Von Imhoff and then Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. So the backlog for Medicaid eligibility is well communicated. I think we've heard about it the last few years. And with the Medicaid expansion in 2015, followed by a 2016-2017 economic recession, the enrollees of Medicaid became quite expansive, I think well over 220,000 people. And the backlog was becoming, I think, worse and worse is what we were hearing. So I think it's important to definitely address it, and I'm glad that we're talking about it. However, I'd like to kind of point out that in my thought, how I look at things is that there's two types of audits. There's an audit in arrears to kind of see what's been going on in 2018 and in the past, and then looking at spotting weaknesses and so forth and making recommendations. And there's audits potentially that can move forward. And what do I mean by that is that Alaska is not alone in its Medicaid eligibility backlog. And in fact, the Foundation for Government Accountability developed draft legislation a few years ago related to eligibility verification called the HOPE Act, and states such as Oklahoma, Mississippi, and Missouri have passed legislation, which means that they hire third-party vendors to help clean up their Medicaid eligibility backlog, and they negotiate pay-for-performance contracts. So what happens is that these third-party vendors, such as Maximus, among others, take a look at the current stock of files and process them, all of them. And in the process, they audit them. In the process, they work the files, getting documentation, making sure that all the files are complete, and then they hand it back to the state for the final approval. The state at this point then doesn't have to manage this administrative, very tedious, very costly, and very time-consuming administrative process, and instead the state can focus on what it does best, which is offering services to Medicaid patients and recipients. Other states have reported tens of millions, if not in the hundreds of millions, of savings. One of the things I also question is whether we did, in fact, add 20 employees to Medicaid eligibility. I do know that we added 20 employees to OCS. Case management. I don't know if we did to Medicaid eligibility. I have the list right here. I'm going to take a look at it, and I can have that answer in a few minutes. So, Mr. Chairman, my comment is, does it make sense to do, let's just say, hypothetically, two audits, one in arrears, and then in the event that the legislature wants to take a look at Medicaid eligibility and looking at a third-party vendor, that's going to audit it also moving forward? Would we be killing two birds with one stone by doing a moving forward audit instead of an arrears audit, or doing both for that matter?
I would think the arrears audit would be more applicable, but the issue that you brought up, it may be right for a discussion internally with the legislature for some statute changes and restructuring, and to work with the audit process, particularly the audit outcome. So, normally when there's legislation that lines up with a particular audit problem, it's the probability of the legislation going through the system goes up substantially. So that would be my recommendation, is we go down the highway of dealing with this audit, and we have that discussion about potential restructuring and try to coincide the analytical work with the outcome of the audit, because it's going to take some time for the audit, take some time to actually do the bill work, so we have a higher likelihood that we have a successful outcome, whatever that outcome is.
Senator, if I may respond, I think one of the potential downfalls of moving forward with an audit in arrears is that people may want to just stop and simply wait for the audit results before moving forward, thereby delaying action on this very significant backlog problem. So people continue not to be eligible for Medicaid, and the state continues to cover patients who should not be eligible and still make their payments. If we wait for this audit to finish, we delay it by
potentially a year or more, versus if we move forward in a forward-looking audit and do a third-party vendor, there's and not do the audit in arrears, then there is less of a chance of the argument saying, well, we need to address this sooner rather than later, and this is our best bet.
I think we should move forward with the audit and then continue this discussion on how we're going to come up with a solution. It's, as you know, it's difficult to get legislation through the system, and the more you can line up the problem with the solution, the higher the probability is of getting a solution other than just internal discussion that goes nowhere in the legislature. So, anything else?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that point, I believe 2 years ago, the legislature does have a piece of legislation already passed that directed the department to hire a contractor to do exactly what Senator von Imhoff is saying. And so if we're going to write a letter to the department, we should ask them the status on that, because in inquiries during the last session, they still had not brought on that contractor and still were not doing what the legislature had directed them to do. So it's not in last year's budget, but the budget before that, when I believe that there was a direction that they should hire someone, and I've heard the name Maximus before. My only caution on hiring outside contractors is it looks really nice up front, and they tell all of us that they're going to save us tons of money, and then you look at what happened when we inserted something like that several years ago on the permanent fund. And the permanent fund has been doing a good job at managing and looking for fraud and doing all that. And so the money that we invested with the contractor did not reap the benefits that were sold to the legislature in putting in that contractor. So with that said, Senator von Imhoff pointed on a pay-to-play or pay-to-performance. And so if we want to do something on pay-for-performance, that is a different path than we took in previous years. But I would look to 2 years ago budgets, because I think we have a direction in there, and I think that the department, which is why I asked Ms. Curtis about cooperation, the department has not hired the contractor that we asked them to hire.
So let's do that as a committee. We'll send that letter off to the department, flush that issue out, and then we can get back in future meetings or in our private discussions and figure out some of the issues that Senator von Imhoff brought up, so we kind of synchronize whatever is going on, whatever direction we take, and try to take something that's fruitful in the end. I think that's and I recall, Senator McKinnon, what that language that you're talking about, so that'll also help, I think, Senator von Imhoff putting a finer point on what needs to be done to move forward. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I concur with everyone's comments. First off, I think the audit needs to go forward. To further, again, develop a working relationship with the department. And prospectively, I could see another audit coming behind this one down the road. For all the reasons that we've talked about here, my colleagues. So I support the audit. I think the six bullets are good. The information that's going to come out of this one, I think it's going to do nothing but help the department streamline the execution of the mission. And so I'll just leave it at that. But I say
let me just put this quick comment on the table. I think, you know, thinking of the comments from Senator von Imhoff, we should have some look at that language that was in the budget a couple of years ago, and then have some discussions outside of the committee on the structure of a forward-looking audit to see if we can't come up with something that works. I recognize the challenge of a delay financially. Is not in our Treasury's best interest if there are substantial savings then. So I guess I'll get to just a minute, Lisa. So I think the intended direction, I think, is good. Let's just line up our ducks and then execute. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate this audit.
One of the things that I dislike about the audits is that we wait for them. I mean, it takes time. These are very complex, and we give Director Curtis a huge amount of work to do. What Senator von Imhoff was referring to was actually discussed at a national meeting about 2 weeks ago as best practices. And the states that have executed that third-party vendor surveillance of eligibility are performing very well. And so I think that I would encourage us, as Senator von Imhoff said, to go forward with putting forth legislation or somehow executing us moving in that positive direction. We don't have to keep reinventing a wheel when other states have found answers to these questions. So I just support and can substantiate what Senator von Imhoff has shared.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, a question for Mr. Ruaro. The figure of 86% increase, does that include the expansion population, or is that independent of that?
Chair, Representative Joseph Sinnott, does it include the expansion population?
It does include.
Yes.
And so a question then for Ms. Curtis. Would the audit, I mean, we were just asked in a questionnaire, I'm not sure why, we were asked in this season how much money the state has spent out of general fund for Medicaid expansion, and it was, I think, $20 million. And we've received $960 million, which I think is a great deal. Certainly, it's got to be good for our economy. Would the audit segregate the numbers so that we know, for example, whether someone is ineligible as an expansion population vis-a-vis a regular population, so that we could decipher those nuances?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, it never crossed my mind that there would need to be any type of distinction between Medicaid expansion and regular Medicaid. The focus would be on the determination of eligibility and whether they're using all the tools they're required to use to determine eligibility, whether they're following best practice tools out there for determining eligibility, whether they're meeting timelines, and if not, why? And can there be some type of recommendation to address those obstacles? Are they redetermining eligibility timely? And if not, what's the financial implication? So in all those thoughts, Medicaid expansion versus regular Medicaid, I don't anticipate us differentiating the population.
Well, just that my understanding of it is fairly rudimentary, but in the one instance with expansion, you're looking at just impecunity and inability to afford Obamacare. In the other, you might be looking at disability. And so the eligibility determination might be really a different thing. And I would like the audit, to the extent that those differences are important, to sort of get into that. I don't know.
We can certainly, in a sample, identify different factors in the population and see if there's any type of correlation between errors. With the focus being on eligibility by determinations by HS staff and the obstacles and challenges, we can certainly try to be as broad as possible to see if we can pick up any other nuances in the population.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess we've got two issues going. One that I really didn't come prepared to speak to today, but that is on the independent contractors doing the audits, because there was just an NCSL in the last 2 months, a whole article on the effect of that has been for those states that use independent auditors or independent enrollers, they actually increased the cost to the state by 2 to 3 times faster than those that did not. So maybe we need to also look at financial implications of that, as well as just whether it is expanded population more quickly
and how that goes. So that I would make, would like to have the auditor look at that as well if we're looking at, I mean, if we're getting into the conversation for legislation, which I don't think we're doing today, but I think we can do it with that as well.
Any other questions, concerns? Josephson, motion.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the special audit request for Medicaid eligibility as presented.
And we have a motion to move that forward as presented. Do we have objections? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move this forward, and then we will have those discussions about legislation and then a forward, which I'm struggling with a little bit of a forward-looking or the kind of a work we can do looking forward to help in coming up with a solution. The Senator von Imhoff brought up. So it's going to be a step closer. With that, we're going to number five, executive session. The committee has items for discussion in executive session with Bill Sisson.
Mr. Chair, I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee go into executive session under Uniform Rule 22 of the Alaska Legislature and AS24.20.301. The purpose of the executive session is to consider confidential audit reports under AS24.20.301.
Okay, thank you. No objection. We'll go into executive session. We will ask the following persons to remain in the room: legislative auditor, I guess her staff, support that she may need, necessary staff for legislative audit. Any legislators not on the committee, and we have a couple today, Senator Olson and Senator Wilson, and staff or members of the committee. Everybody else has to clear out, and I'll be surprised if any chair moves at all. That's that. And we will stand at ease while we prepare the room. Legislative Budget Audit Committee back to order, October 9, 2018, 11:33 p.m. We're coming back in from executive session. If I could have the clerk call the roll, please.
Representative Kawasaki. Representative Seaton.
Here.
Representative Sponholz.
Here.
Representative Johnston.
Here.
Representative Ortiz. Representative Ortiz?
Here.
Representative Josephson, Vice Chair?
Here.
Senator McKinnon?
Here.
Senator Bishop?
Here.
Senator Giesel?
Here.
Senator Hoffman? Senator von Imhoff, alternate?
Here.
Senator Stedman, Chair?
Here.
10 present.
And we do have a quorum. I'm still confused on Rep. Ortiz. Is he here or absent?
I am here, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Okay, we have a quorum to finish up our business today. I'd like to have Rep. Josephson make a couple of motions.
I move that the following final audit be released as a public report, Board of Marine Pilots.
We have a motion to move the Board of Marine Pilots to a public report. Do we have objection? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move the Board of Marine Pilots to a public report. Rep. Josephson.
I move that the following preliminary audits be released to the appropriate agencies for response. The Board of Barbers and Hairdressers, Board of Dental Examiners, Board of Nursing, the Suicide Prevention Council, the Matanuska-Made Property Disposal Preliminary Audit, and the Statewide Single Audit for Fiscal Year 15 reissue.
We have a motion to move the said items to preliminary audit.
release. Do we have objection to any of that? Singularity or involuntarity? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and take that action. Before we adjourn, does any member have anything good for the order? Chaotic order? Seeing none, we are talking about having a meeting in December, so we'll be working with the members probably somewhere around the 13th, 12th, I'm not quite sure, somewhere in there. We're trying to not get it too close to Christmas, but you will get a gift from the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee for Christmas. It will not be a reportable gift. It will be the single audit, hopefully for 2015, a financial report for me to go Christmas. Get to the chairman. We are adjourned.